reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
Since 2003, the PUSH Festival has been running annually in Vancouver as an interdisciplinary, multimodal space for artists across mediums to interact and perform. Today, I'm speaking with Gabriel Martin, the Artistic Director for the festival. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
In what ways do local artists and communities shape PUSH's identity, and how do artists from across Canada and beyond fit into that?
Yes, thanks for the question. I think, you know, each year there are local works in the festival that are so critical to balance the international and the national. And I think those works are always in dialogue with each other. That's our goal. And then literally we try and create space for dialogue around them. I'm not just, there are artist talks, you know, after the shows. There are interviews I conduct with artists that are disseminated digitally around the shows, and workshops. But also we have this industry series for arts industry artists, producers, presenters to come together for a week during the festival, see work together, and really to be in dialogue about what it means to create and present in this contemporary moment. It's a really important platform also for local artists to get their work seen by colleagues, people they know or don't know from across Canada, from abroad. That's a rare opportunity because of our relative geographic isolation. And it's a really important role that PUSH plays. And from the beginning, the festival was envisioned as an international festival, but an international festival that is creating that space for dialogue and exchange by having artists local, national, and abroad sharing stages, sharing spaces. That's something that's special about a festival that's different from a seasonal presentation kind of format where everybody's in the city at the same place, at the same time, same place. And there's something that's possible because of the relationships that, you know, emerge, or at least the potentiality of that. And then your second question was about national artists, was it?
Yeah, from across Canada, then beyond. So worldwide, international.
Yeah, the festival is fundamentally about expanding our sense of the world, our paradigms for expression and relation. So having the intersection of diverse perspectives and practices is really like the foundation of what this festival is about and has been from the very beginning when, you know, it started at a time where there were very few presenters presenting national, international, contemporary performance. So, you know, a lot of the work presented in this festival is interdisciplinary or adventurous in form, is in conversation with social and political urgencies, and we're still limited in terms of the number of presenters and just kind of the scale of our scene locally in terms of the capacity to welcome that kind of work. So, you know, it was especially critical in the moment it was started in terms of being able to bring work that wouldn't otherwise come here. And now there's more opportunities, there are more presenters, but it still remains unique. And I am not, I don't think I'm out of place in saying that it's very critical. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, as artistic director, what are some of the core values that guide your, I guess, your curatorial decisions for the festival?
Well, that it's a truly international festival. And I mean, it's in the title and maybe that sounds obvious, but it's actually quite complicated to present a festival that has work that is from the global north as well as the global south because of the economics, because of the kind of neo-colonial economic reality, cultural economics, where there is just so much more support from, you know, in general, from countries that are part of the global north to financially support touring artists and creative export that doesn't happen in a lot of other places in the world. And so that's a real value and priority in terms of being able to create some equity in terms of who we see on stage when we say international, who that it's not just artists from Europe, even though there are obviously lots of great artists from Europe and also lots of diasporic, like artists that belong to diasporic cultures from elsewhere in the world based in Europe. So that is one. And, you know, we aim to support that value or realize that value by also investing in co-productions where we can, you know, which is a limited resource at this point, but I'm trying to develop that. So, for example, tonight we premiere Kamwe Kamwe, which is a work we're co-producing by the Zimbabwean dance company Jerihuni Movement Factory. That's just one of the ways that we work towards that. And beyond that, the values, I mean, that I kind of mentioned the simple mandate to expand our sense of the world. And so that is really done by how the work helps us situate ourselves in relationship to the issues, you know, the contemporary global issues. And that also sparks our imagination because that's where change happens. That's where we can imagine different, better futures, otherwise ways of living, being. And so I really hope that the festival does, is work that transforms and transports us and really gives us a sense of possibility and potential by offering us something that's an experience that we haven't experienced before.
On that note, I want to look a little bit more at the audiences and who do you imagine PUSH is for in terms of the audience? Who are you still trying to reach and how do you invite audiences into more unfamiliar works?
I think that's a challenge. I mean, there's always so much more resource we could put into marketing and outreach. It's a truly diverse festival in terms of, as mentioned, the perspectives and practices on stage. But I think in this city, performing arts often get siloed. And, you know, there are people who go to see dance shows, often dancers. And then there's people who don't, you know, just for an example. And a lot of the projects have content or thematics that can speak to a really broad audience. But if they don't already have a theater-going practice, it's a real challenge. And so I think we kind of work at it slowly, you know, to the capacity we can. We do have an accessible PUSH program, which is focused on integrating access supports into the shows and working with artists to develop elements of the shows that can be developed so that they are more accessible to various people with different barriers to participation. And part of that role is the community ticketing. So specifically that focus is on partnering with organizations that serve and work with people who have financial barriers to participation. But also, this is Andrea Cowden, and I just need to give her a shout out because she's so great. We do collaborate as well on, you know, for each project, okay, you know, is there a specific cultural community who, you know, would really, who this work is speaking to, that share a lived experience of the artist on stage that might connect with this work? And we do that to the extent that we can. I think this year we're talking about the festival as being a festival for the culturally fearless, and that's meant as less of a challenge and more as an invitation, hoping to cultivate a kind of practice of theater going where, you know, it's not just about I like it or I don't like it, but that there can be more of a like, okay, I didn't like this part of it. Why didn't I like this part of the show? But I did like this part of it. And why did I like this? Or why do, what are the other things affecting my experience of this work? Where do I think the artist is coming from? Did the artist achieve what they were trying to do? Like all those, you know, that ideally if the work sparks conversation, emotional response, that that there's some value in that. Because the thing is it is a very diverse festival and we have very diverse audiences. So that means that not every piece in the festival is for everybody that intersects with PUSH. So it's about how we try and communicate the work and then also how we're trying to cultivate in our audiences a cultural fearlessness for different experiences. And we hope that people come to more than just one show in the festival so that they can get a bit of a breadth of experience and see how those, how the different pieces might be in conversation with each other.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of artists tend to thrive in the environment that PUSH curates?
Well, in terms of the artists that are part of the program, I would say a lot, but like, I wish that I could support more artists in, being presented at PUSH because as mentioned, there's such a lack of presentation opportunities and opportunities to be, have their work made visible, beyond the city. But yeah, as mentioned, you know, there are a lot of artists. I'm going to start that over. So I spoke about adventurousness and form. And I think the festival prioritizes artists working interdisciplinarily, taking creative risks, working in unconventional ways, experimenting. So not a lot of conventional expressions of form. There are very few pieces in the festival where you can say, oh, that's dance or that's theater, because of that porousness in expression. And and I would say also that it's important that, you know, I try and think about cultural urgency. You know, we're living in a poly crisis. So for me, artists whose work is in relation to that reality. And it doesn't have to be in a literal way with, you know, a very with literal text about the experience of living now and in these times, though literal text can be part of it. But that their practice and that their lived experience and that, you know, they're creating from a place that is conscious of that reality. With the wider world. So I think that's even something, you know, it might be a local artist, but the influences and the conversations they're part of and the way they're engaging, the research they're doing is engaged with a wider sense of the world.
And you've been with the festival for a couple years now. What surprised you the most about directing PUSH?
What has surprised me the most? That's a great question. I'm having a hard time coming up with the answer to that one. What surprised me the most? I think that sometimes I don't think I have an answer for that question right now. Sorry.
That's fine. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just got one more before I let you go. What excites you the most about the festival's future?
Well, right now we're kind of taking it year by year. There will definitely be a PUSH next year. So I don't mean to, you know, alarm anyone, but there is a kind of living in the moment, experience because of the financial precarity. So it's hard to plan far in advance, just specifically with regards to arts funding. I will speak to though what I'm excited about in this festival. And I would say it's all the artists that are bringing us into diffracted and deep senses of time that are giving us a sense of a more macro experience, that are weaving in ancestral and ancient embodied practices, and also opening up futurisms that exist outside of like the futures that dominant culture wants to provide for us. So I'm really excited that there are so many projects in this festival that really expand our sense of existence and help situate us in relation to possible futures. And there are so many projects that I'm just really excited to experience. I'm talking about, I mean, there's so many, but, you know, Askewan is one of these, catching up to the future of our past. Remember that time we met in the future, Split Two, Sepajiji. The list is pretty long.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for meeting with me on such short notice.
Yeah, thank you for your interest and push. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
How dare you complain about This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Coquitlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh. We also stream online at cjsf.ca and listen to podcasts of our programs and our website.
First up, I want to call out the city of Vancouver, who's the landlord to these buildings right here of Hootsuite. And they're offering them a sweetheart deal. They pay about a quarter of the price. So let's tell Ken Sim and the city of Vancouver to either kick out Hootsuite or cut this deal that they have with them and, you know, force their hand, because we know that these companies only listen to the money. And we have to just, you know, use every angle we possibly can get. And I also want to be clear that we are demanding that Jim Pattison freeze any and avoid any future ties to ICE and disclose any possible pending or current properties to the DHS and to ICE. This could be the tip of the iceberg, folks, and that we need full disclosure. Billionaires like Jim Pattison have run this province for far too long. He has profited crisis after crisis. During COVID, he doubled his net worth from $5 to $10 billion by exploiting his workers and price gouging all of us on bullshit. Jim Pattison makes more money in his sleep than his workers do in a year. And so, you know, and when we look around the province, a major response to this boycott action was that people don't have another option. They are forced to shop at Pattison grocery stores in rural communities, in suburbs, across the province. He has an effective monopoly on our food supply. And that's what happens, you know, when one evil billionaire is able to consolidate resource control, make record profits, and then use that money to buy warehouses in Virginia? Is that really what we see the future in Hootsuite? And so, you know, as I was thinking, you know, so many more people wanted to participate in this boycott, because what we really need is public grocery stores to eliminate these monopolies and, you know, have better paying jobs, better workers, because, you know, we have these handful of billionaires who are controlling our lives. And, you know, it's powerful examples like this today where we take that power, take back that power and force real change. So I'm excited to keep up the pressure on Pattison for full disclosure and to freeze any future action with ICE. And I think, Hootsuite, you're up next. And I am so impressed with the crowd here today. You know, today's... you know, today, this victory, I think, marks the beginning of a new era in BC. The power as the people and fund our own future. Fund the future we deserve. I think this victory shows that as a party and as a movement, we can unmask the greed of the billionaire class and all the ways they exploit and harm others to grow their personal wealth. We can build a plan to take back the wealth that has been siphoned from this province and to fund all of the things we need and deserve, from social housing to public grocery stores and free university and tuition. I know that all of us here today, we are at the forefront of a powerful political movement to reclaim our economy for the working class, to fight for human rights, and hold the line on all of these issues. And together we can build a resilient, thriving thriving province that respects workers, that respects Indigenous rights and our planetary boundaries. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Hey, are you okay? It's okay not to be okay. That's why Kids Help Phone is available 24/7, 365 days a year, across Canada. So you don't have to deal with your feelings alone. You can text with a trained volunteer crisis responder or call a professional counselor, whatever works best for you. You can also connect with Kids Help Phone through trained interpreters in over 100 languages, and it's always free. Visit kidshelpphone.ca for more info and give your feelings a place to go.